Most people, grown-ups included, remember their ABCs for one reason and one reason only: the alphabet song. Seriously, try to locate a letter's place in the alphabet without hearing that tune in your head. It's really hard. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on Central Standard, we'll be learning about the relationship between music and memory, not just as a way of storing useful facts, but also in the treatment of Alzheimer's and dementia. A new program uses tailored iPod playlists to help patients connect with their memories and themselves. A filmmaker has documented the results in the movie Alive Inside, just as the Music and Memory program makes its debut here in Kansas City. We'll have more on Central Standard after this news.
How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm fine.
Who am I?
I don't know. Wait a minute. I don't know.
Okay, it's Cherry.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and you just heard an exchange between a man named Henry, who suffers from dementia, and his daughter Sherry. In this scene from the documentary Alive Inside, Henry doesn't recognize his daughter. He sits slumped over, and his face looks blank. A few moments after this exchange, Henry is given an iPod loaded up with music. When he hears a familiar song, his eyes light up and he starts keeping time with his hands and feet. Let's hear what Henry sounds like after some time spent listening to his favorite music.
What was your favorite music when you were young?
Well, Cab Calloway was my number one band guy. I liked it.
What's your favorite Cab Calloway song?
Oh, I'll be home there for Christmas. You can count and plan on me with plenty of snow. Mistletoe, present, red brand new tree. Ow!
So I'm Gina Kaufman, and joining me this morning on Central Standard is filmmaker Michael Rosato Bennett, whose documentary Alive Inside explores music and memory. We'll provide information on local screenings at the end of today's show, and we'll also have those details on our website later today. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Tell us more about that moment with Henry.
Well, you know, it's you did that. You laid that all out so beautifully. I think you really sort of underlined the very thing that it took me a year to learn. And, you know, that is that when we think of people with dementia, we kind of think of them as lost, as being incapable of pleasure, as having no profoundness left. And I have to admit that when I began this film, which was just sort of started out as a small job building a website with some video clips in it for somebody, I went into a nursing home and I saw all these people lined up against the side of the wall, just sort of lost in, you know, their heads sort of fallen to their chests. And I literally just thought I was in a holding tank for, you know, the door, the waiting room before death, if you will. And so for me, I was so overwhelmed and surprised when Henry kind of bubbled back to life. And, you know, you heard
so much of it is visual.
Yeah. I mean, you have to see this. This is, I call this the only good news film ever made about Alzheimer's, because what you see is you see an access in people who we think have nothing, no capacity for love, for life, for joy. We see this sliver of functionality that is not just a sliver, but as you saw in Henry, when you enter the world of music or you enter the world of emotion, these people struck with this condition are absolutely capable of expressing beautiful and phenomenal music and also being able to express emotion and to feel very, very deeply and to remember. When it's connected to these sort of deep hidden wells, if you will, of memory that are tied to music and personalized music in specific. You know, it's just striking what happens when you see somebody who's basically dead sort of resurrect into profoundness. I mean, you heard Henry's voice. That voice that came out of this man is a greater voice than I have. You know, a little bit later, he started talking in his sort of his poetic way of talking that he really hadn't done in years. And I was just amazed. I'm like, this man has more poetry in him than I do.
You hinted at this earlier, but what inspired you to investigate the use of music in nursing homes, especially with patients struggling with memory disorders like Alzheimer's and dementia?
Well, I mean, I would like to say that I had a reason. I didn't. I just met Henry. And what happened to me when Henry woke up, I started to cry. You know, I felt goosebumps over my whole body when he awakened. And, you know, I had just walked through this sort of gauntlet of people who were just basically lost. And the idea that, you know, if we could tell the world about this capacity in these people, that it would shift something in people's minds. And, you know, just the simple idea that was worthy. It took me almost four years to do this. And, you know, raising money and shooting and trying to, you know, I mean, it's not easy to make a documentary film. We don't live in a culture like Denmark where my friend Joshua Oppenheimer, you know, is supported by the government and all of his documentaries are paid for by the government. We live in America where it's not easy to make a documentary on your own, I guess. And so it took a lot of effort to get this story, you know, into theaters. It took a lot of effort to get this made. And I'm just very grateful that I have this opportunity to share what I learned and what Dan Cohen of Music and Memory has learned and what people now all over the country, all over the world, actually, are starting to do.
You know, the name of your movie, Alive Inside, it seems especially resonant with me as I hear you talking about how people appear when they have some of these illnesses from the outside. Were you surprised at, I mean, it sounds like, could you talk about Alive Inside, the name of the movie?
You know, I love the name Alive Inside because I think that, you know, that's just really, like I said, I have one mission, and my mission is to shift people's consciousness about these people and to, you know, encourage the desire for people to connect with them in their families, in institutions. I would like to inspire connection between young people and these elders. And, you know, to really understand that there is life inside of them.
Well,
and then there's other repercussions of that because they're in an institution, the American Nursing Home, which is a very, very sort of factory, if you will, like it's been laid out in a kind of for the benefit of caregivers and not for sort of the end of life for a human being. So they are alive inside this institution as well.
Well, we're also here with Laura Swartzendruber, Kansas City's Music and Memory Project Coordinator. And Laura, maybe you can tell us a little bit about Music and Memory, the program that Michael Rosato Bennett witnessed. What's the program in a nutshell?
Well, this is a takeoff from Dan Cohen's program, Music and Memory. And Dan's a social worker up in New York. And I believe that's where Michael first saw this happen and then decided to make it into a movie. And his experience was that when you connected people with a personalized playlist via an iPod and used headphones so that music was coming at the person without outside influences and distractions, that you could really connect to a person, that you could evoke speech and memories and access parts of the brain that you can't usually access in a person with dementia or Alzheimer's disease.
How do you figure out which songs to include on a patient's playlist, since the patient is not usually in a position before listening to sort of be forthcoming with that information?
Well, actually, depending on where a person is at in the disease, they could definitely participate in putting together that playlist. This would be a good intervention for anyone over the course of the disease, anyone from the early stages to the late stages. But it's actually a really good way of empowering a family to help create this playlist. It gives the family a chance to spend time reminiscing with their loved one, to share contributions about what kind of music maybe dad listened to in the past or good memories you have of mom listening to music. And of course, you can interview the person themselves about what songs they might enjoy having on the playlist.
So I've read that the guy who started this program in New York, that his original motivation was actually that he imagined himself later in life, and what was he going to want to do? And he was going to want to listen to his favorite songs from the 60s. And he was preoccupied with the idea that he wanted to make sure that he was in a position to be able to do that. Do you think that that this kind of thought process about being someone who's early in life, imagining that, do you think that people imagine correctly what that experience is like?
The experience of having Alzheimer's mm-hmm. or being in a nursing home?
Both, yeah.
I think to some extent, I mean, I think we all think about, you know, what might the future hold for me. You know, his experience of thinking about would I have access to my iPod in the nursing home. I think we do things like that. And I know that since we've started this program, I've thought about what would be on my playlist. You know, what songs would I put on there? So, yeah, I think we all think about that.
Well, rounding out our crew this morning is Jeannie Buckendahl, whose husband is an Alzheimer's patient. Jeannie has been caring for her husband for the 20 years since his diagnosis, and she's recently gotten him involved in the Music and Memory program. Good morning, Jeannie.
Good morning.
Jeannie, tell us your husband's story. Tell us how you became a part of this.
Of the music program?
Well, first, tell us the story of your husband, his diagnosis, and the journey you've been on.
Well, he is 83, and so when he was 63, he was diagnosed. He went on disability and then on Social Security and stayed at home pretty much while I was teaching. And he was Mr. Mom, and he would enjoy that because his garage was his haven. He has a sign in his garage, if it isn't found here, you don't need it. And that was doable for 10 years. Then 10 years ago, our sons decided we needed to be closer to a family member to help me because we could see some change in Daddy and really didn't trust him with some of the tools and things in his garage. And that was his love. So we moved down here to Kansas, and I did everything from home care to in care and daycare, and it all worked until the personal hygiene became an issue. I couldn't bathe him. I didn't have the equipment nor the strength to.
Yeah.
And then he had some anger issues, and so 2.5 years ago, we put him in Aberdeen.
When you talk about anger issues, is this something that's sort of a common part of the trajectory of Alzheimer's?
I think they tell me it is. And I attended a lot of support groups and found that to be.
How did that manifest itself, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, we tried many things, you know, changing all his activities, writing everything. I'm very good at journaling. I journaled, and I had papers all over the house for writing notes to him and things like this. But little things would set him off, and finally it was necessary to put him on meds.
And so how did you find out about Music and Memory, and what really captivated your interest?
Okay. My background is teaching, and I've used music in the classroom for years and years, but not to this extent. And music has been very important in our family. Ellery and I both sang in the choir. We sang with our children. He he romanced me with music when we were dating. So I knew music was important to him. And when I read about music therapy, I thought, yeah, he needed to hear this. And so I started little by little putting music in his room. And then I read about Live Inside. And so my children helped me make a shuffle with, and I made the list. And in retrospect, we probably would do it differently today. And I intend to do some tweaking on what we're doing.
What would you do differently?
Well, I had a playlist of about 150 songs that I knew he liked because we sang in the choir, so we had a lot of hymns. But then he also loved Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, that sort of thing. And then we danced. We did a lot of polka and waltzes. And then he was in the Army, so I have military songs. And so that's all gemixed right now, where I think, as the director said, I need to specify which songs he listens to at specific times when I want to him to accomplish certain reactions.
Interesting. Laura, I wonder if this is kind of where the expertise comes in, this idea that, you know, you can create a playlist for your own family member. That wouldn't be an impossible task, but I wonder if the experience of doing this for family after family teaches you certain techniques or certain tried and trusted approaches.
Well, certainly if families are interested in doing this on their own, I would definitely encourage them to, you know, anytime we can get somebody connected to this any way possible, I would encourage that. And actually, Dan Cohen's website, Music in Memory, has information on how to set up a playlist. But as part of this program here with through our local chapter, and we serve 66 counties in Kansas and Missouri, so we cover definitely this entire listening area, we'd be happy to help you set up that playlist. And we do that free of cost. We can connect families to the iPod itself and the headphones. And then one of our staff would come out and meet with the individual with the disease and the family and interview them and figure out what songs would go on this playlist. And we would be looking specifically for songs that are connected to specific memories. So it's more than just connecting to songs that you like or enjoyed or provoke a good emotion. It's about songs that have a specific memory.
May I interrupt?
Please.
I had a wonderful experience because our pastor was coming to give us communion, and Ellery was very unresponsive because he had a stroke in March. And so there was very, very little verbal exchange. But I put on the hymns, the music with the hymns in the room to set the stage. And we listened to hymns for a good 5-10 minutes, and in walked the pastor. And he was very receptive to taking communion. We came to the part where we said the Lord's Prayer. I held his hand, and he actually said, "Our Father who art in heaven," and then he wouldn't say any more. Tears ran down my face, the pastor's face. I mean, this is what it's all about.
It sounds like that does something for you, too, as the person who loves this person, that you would, like, see the person you knew before.
Actually, you find that your strategies are becoming real.
Yeah. Well, and Laura, I wonder if there's something you can tell us about the disease itself of Alzheimer's that would help us understand what it is that music is doing that all of the many things people might have already tried don't do.
Well, so Alzheimer's disease is a progressive neurological disease. We keep using the words Alzheimer's and dementia interchangeably. Dementia is the umbrella term that refers to that short-term memory loss, confusion, delirium. So as the disease progresses, it destroys the connections between neurons and therefore makes it hard to access memories. Short-term memories initially, and over the progression of the disease, you move farther into long-term memory. But that long-term memory is preserved for a good portion of the disease. And the unique thing about music is that it's unlike most things in our brain, it's stored across lots of different areas in the brain. So, for example, speech is stored in just one certain part of the brain, but music can be accessed in lots of different areas. So as memory loss progresses, we can access different memories through music, reaching different parts of the brain in ways that, you know, as opposed to the parts that are destroyed, we can reach it in other ways. So that makes it a really unique way of tapping into those long-term memories. And like Jeannie was saying, tapping into that connection, because a lot of times caregivers do have that experience where their loved one seems to go farther and farther from them. But music is a way to reconnect and rejoin and find the person again within the disease.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Gina Kaufman. You just heard the voice of Laura Swartzendruber. We're also here with Jeannie Buckendahl, who's been telling us the story of her husband. And we've got Michael Rosato Bennett on the line. He created the documentary Alive Inside. And Michael, you include some really expert voices on issues of memory in the movie Alive Inside. Oliver Sacks and Dr. Bill Thomas. Could you talk a little bit about what you learned from them as you explored this? You were a newcomer to this issue, as I am and as many of our listeners must be.
Right. Well, I mean, basically much of what I learned from them has been covered by our wonderful guests. I just wanted to say that one of the greatest pains for somebody dealing with somebody sort of disappearing from them that our other guests really illustrated and talked about so beautifully, is that feeling that you can't reach somebody. And I just want to talk about the joy that I've seen when somebody gets to see their family member sort of come back, even if it's just for a moment, even if it's just for a hint of what was, like what that does to you. And I've been through this a bit myself. It's just beyond describing. And one of the most powerful things about this is twofold. This is how it decreases anxiety and acting out and sundowning, how it can be a tool for the caregiver to give them a moment of peace, perhaps, where they could stop and have a cup of coffee when their loved one is kind of lost in their world of music, and how it can help them do certain tasks. Like we've seen lots of people where even in an institution, there was this one guy and he was acting out. And I think the reason they act out so much is because the world becomes so overwhelming for them, and they get frustrated and angry because their mind still remembers the way they used to react and the way they used to be. That's one of the things that really knocks me out about this, is that these people don't seem to ever forget like how they used to be. You know, they forget so much, but they know how they used to be in some ways. And there's a pain with that. And I think that creates that frustration. And music, for many of the people you'll see in the film, is something that they can actually experience 100%. You know, trying to live a normal life for them is something that they can't do 100%. Sometimes they can only do it 20% or 5%. But when you kind of close the world down for them and then you take them into their like deepest memories, they are in a place where you could almost say that they're there. And I've had many, many people with dementia saying, you know, like they talk about this place where they are when they're with their music. And it's a different place than where they are when they don't have their music.
And it looks like Laura Swartzendruber would like to jump in on this.
Well, I'd like to add that, you know, this program has no downside. Worst case scenario, it won't work. But best case scenario, you know, what Michael's kind of hitting on there as using music as an intervention. Best case scenario, you're using an environmental intervention as opposed to, say, a pharmacological intervention, which is always going to be a better choice if that can work. And as a part of that, we would, as part of the music and the memory program, in addition to helping the participants choose the playlist, we'll also work on scheduling use of the iPod during times that might be most beneficial to the person. So, for example, a person who is maybe reluctant to shower, Jeannie referenced that with her husband, that would be a perfect time to put that iPod on and listen to the playlist.
I do have a little story to tell you. I hope I'm not interfering.
No, please go ahead.
Ellery is no longer on drugs. I want your director to know, thanks to him, I think. And the anger issues are gone. He's only on one med. But during his spa bath, which he gets three or four times a week. The CNA at Aberdeen puts on his music in the bathroom, and Elroy sings all the while he bathes. And the other day I was in his room waiting for him to come back from his bath, and I could hear this singing coming down the hall, and I laughed at the CNA. I said, oh, I heard Elroy. He said, oh, yeah, he's been hi all the while.
Well, this is exactly something I wanted to ask about. One of the expert voices in the film Alive Inside, Dr. Bill Thomas, makes an argument that the healthcare approach to these diseases tends to be a medication approach, and that it's just turning dials up and down. And he makes the argument that part of that has to do with the mentality that there isn't life beyond what he calls life beyond adulthood, and that that music is a different approach. Do you guys see that as a different approach with a different mentality, or are they perhaps complementary, different angles to the same thing?
Look, we have a real problem right now. We have the federal government wants to reduce the use of antipsychotics in nursing homes. These 20% of people in nursing homes are on these drugs, and and even families call out for these drugs, and they do it for the reason that our guest said, because their loved ones start acting out. They go into a place where the family feels out of control. And up until now, sort of, you know, we have had no other tool. We literally have had no other tool than these drugs, which really basically sedate. And one out of 57 people dies from these drugs. That's why the U.S. government wants to reduce the use of these drugs. And Kohler Goldwater, a facility in New York City, part of the HHC sort of safety net here in New York City, it's an amazing nursing home and hospital organization. They did a study, the head of psychiatry did a study for 3 years in his institution, and they gave half the people personalized music and half not. The population that they gave personalized music to, they reduced the use of antipsychotic medication in those patients from 38% of the people being on antipsychotics all the way down to 13%. You know, and your guest saying that her husband is no longer on medication, that is the promise of this. That just makes me feel so happy. I can't tell you how happy that makes me feel to hear that. You know, and I think that we can spread this. The Music in Memory is doing an amazing job, and everyone connected to this, you know, is doing this out of really pure love. And this is the wonderful thing, that we finally have something that we can actually use instead of drugs.
And yeah, I want to jump in and let the person in the room here who works with Alzheimer's patients weigh in on this. Do you agree with what you're hearing, Laura?
Well, I agree. And anytime we can reduce drug use is a good thing. But I think we also need to be realistic about there is a place for medications.
Absolutely.
And they are absolutely part of the picture in many cases with Alzheimer's disease. I mean, it is a disease that has a lot of what we call neuropsychological symptoms associated with it, which are changes in behavior and mood. But I agree with Michael. Anytime that we can use a different kind of intervention, that's a great way to go.
What is it about drugs that is not, it seems like there's sort of an aversion to using them, at least in this conversation. What is it that's not great about drugs?
Well, I mean, it's not that using medications is a bad thing. There's absolutely a place for using medications. It's just that if you had a headache, if you had the opportunity to maybe lie down in a cold, dark room instead of taking a Tylenol, your body would thank you for that.
Yeah.
So it's very similar to that. Anytime you can use a different intervention, that's a good thing. And there, you know, music is fantastic for this. There's also interventions like using art, you know, just spending time with a person. Anything that we can change in the person's environment or how we're reacting to them is a good first way of approaching the problem.
And Jeannie, you were sort of enthusiastically responding to that statement that there is actually a place for drugs.
Oh, absolutely. I would. There was a time when it was necessary. It was either I was going to be hurt or Elroy was going to be hurt. We couldn't control his reactions. And so this is really good now. I'm so happy. I've even, there's three other patients in his neighborhood that are listening to music now, and we have such a wonderful cooperation with Tim Allen, the director of Aberdeen. He has a person working in Ellery's residence with each person individually. So meeting their individual needs, like she said, is so important. So important.
Well, we're going to have to take a short break from this Central Standard conversation. We will return to it in just a moment. And we want to know from you, do you have loved ones with Alzheimer's and dementia? Have you witnessed the effect that music has on their condition? What has been your experience? Call 816-235-2888 to share your story. Central Standard will be right back. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're talking about music and memory, particularly the way that music is used as treatment and a way of connecting for Alzheimer's and dementia patients. We're joined today by filmmaker Michael Rosato Bennett. He's with us by Skype. He's created a documentary called Alive Inside that explores this very issue. That movie opens later this week at the Tivoli. And we're also joined by Laura Swartzendruber, Kansas City's Music and Memory Project Coordinator, and Jeannie Buckendahl, whose husband is an Alzheimer's patient who's been using music to return to himself in many ways. And Jeannie, one of the songs that you told us had been effective with your husband because it tapped into some earlier memories was Earth Angel by the Penguins. Can you talk about that a little bit?
It's just his favorite. I mean, he played it a lot. He loved it. Not only that, Kenny Rogers, you know, Johnny Cash. He even has a shirt with Johnny Cash's name on it that he wears.
And he still wears that shirt?
Uh-huh. They put it on him, and he likes it. We did a lot of dancing, so any polka music, waltz music, just, oh.
When your husband hears Earth Angel, is there any particular reaction that lets you know he's really loving it?
A smile. A smile.
Well, let's give that a listen.
Just a fool in love with you.
Jeannie, I can see that this is having a really profound effect on you, and if you're not able to talk about it right now, we can pass. But if you want to, I just really invite you to share. You had mentioned that he had wooed you with music. I can't help but wonder, listening to the lyrics of this song, if the song had been part of your courtship.
Oh, he sang to me. He sang to me.
Oh, that's really wonderful.
Sometimes the songs were from the Army, and they weren't very...
Not so romantic.
But we'd laugh, and we'd laugh. But yeah, Earth Angel, yeah.
Oh, and I would say that's the power of music. I mean, obviously it's reached Jeannie here in this moment. Music is powerful for us emotionally at any point in life.
Yeah, and whether we're experiencing a memory disorder or not.
And it carries through, and that's part of the reason it works.
Michael, is there a story that any of this is triggering for you? You've met so many people who have experienced the relationship between music and memory in all kinds of ways.
Wow. I'm just so moved by Jeannie's reaction. The person I think that this speaks, the story that this speaks the most to is all of us. You know, it's so amazing. Like I sometimes give these talks after people see the film, and I ask them to close their eyes and just try and go back into their memories and find a moment when they were listening to music when they were a teenager. You know, and to just go into that moment for a moment. And it's just what happens is exactly what just happened when you played Earth Angel. You know, it literally summons up an entire world. And And, you know, it just took Jeannie all the way back to, you know, she was 17 years old or 18 years old. And those places live in us. And I think that really what this does is it's a whole different way of looking at care. You know, are our elders who are suffering in this way, are they people who are sick and in need of medical attention, or are they human beings going through, a great challenge? And one of the things that they need is connection. They need connection to their people. And, you know, Jeannie's husband is very, very lucky to have her, to have a woman.
I couldn't agree more.
who absolutely and without question is deeply connected to him, and he is blessed by her, and she is a great human being. And, you know, I go into these institutions and I see, you know, 50% of the people in these institutions, some of them are there 10 years, and 50% of them get zero visitors. So there's a whole other question to this discussion. You know, which is, you know, what when you give somebody their music, what you're doing is you're recognizing their deepest memory, their deepest humanity. But when you put someone in an institution and they're alone for the last 10 years of their life, you know, that is the exact opposite of the joy that we're talking about right now. And if there's any shift that we're capable of creating, you know, we've done one shift by your radio show and by telling this story and by my film. And that's people are saying, and by the music and memory work, people are saying, oh, great, music is a tool. You know,
well, and I would think Laura wants to jump in here.
I would add to that, too, the power of reminiscence. I mean, that is something that all of us as people enjoy doing. When you get together with old friends, you tell old stories. And that's part of what's going on here as well. And for a person with Alzheimer's disease, again, their long-term memory is still intact. And so spending time in the past with them reminiscing is just a fantastic way of reaching them and communicating and connecting.
Well, I'd love to know if our listeners have had loved ones who have had this kind of experience, if they've witnessed loved ones with Alzheimer's or dementia connecting with music. And they can call 816-235-2888 to share their experiences. That's, we want to hear from you, your story, at 816-235-2888. We've got Roger on the line. He's calling us from Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Roger.
Hi, I'm just headed back to home in Kansas City following my weekly visit with my mother. And she's had memory issues for about the past 10 years. She's now 95 years old. And what your guests have described has been exactly what I've personally experienced with her over this 10-year period. Now, in terms of her memory, she has no recognition of me, no remembrance of anything until we begin singing some of the great hymns of the church. And she has been a church person all of her life. And immediately, those resonate with her. And I've even tried some unscientific probing and exploring with her. I will ask her questions about certain incidents in her life. She'll just look at me blankly. No response, no answer of any sort. Then we'll sing some hymns, and those will activate in her, evidently, an ability to reach down into the bank and retain some of those memories and things that she never even mentioned before. After we've sung a few of the hymns, come back to her very clearly, and I'm just so astounded at that. So I'm anxious to see the film that's being produced and going to be available soon, and I just wanted to share that little tidbit as part of my experience with her. It's really meant a lot to me, too, as a caregiver to her. I'll just hang up and listen to you talk about it on the air.
Thanks, Roger. We've enjoyed hearing about your experience.
Well, and Roger, I would let you know, too, that beyond the powerfulness of that interaction, sharing music with somebody like that is the gift that keeps on giving, because that positive feeling and that connectedness, that'll linger in the person's day. And your mother will continue to probably be in a good mood from interactions like that.
And Michael, in your film, there was some discussion about how the effect of music is not just something that happens while the person is listening to the music, that there's some benefit that endures after that interaction. Can you talk about that a little bit, what you witnessed?
Well, I mean, you know, like in people like Henry or Mary Lou, when there's when they get their music, just as everybody said, this is exactly what happens. Dr. Connie Tomino, who founded the Institute of Music and Neurological Function with Oliver Sacks, did a study where they gave personalized music to people 3 times a week for an hour over 10 months. And then there was a control group that didn't get their music. And after 10 months, they tested these residents with Alzheimer's, and they scored 50% higher on their test scores than the population that didn't have music. So there is a residual effect. It's not a cure by any means, but what it seems to do is it seems to wake up parts of the brain that are not being used. And when you put somebody in an institution and they don't have as much contact and stimulation and love, they begin to fade very quickly. So that's what was happening with the other population, in my humble opinion, is that they were continuing to fade. And the people that were given music and contact were able to resurrect certain functionality. And that's a very, very important point, and one that I hope all of our work together makes a change in sort of our institutional care.
Let's hear from Alex and Lawrence, who might have some special perspective on this. Alex is a music therapy student at KU. Hi, Alex.
Yeah, I completely agree with the neurological function of music. It's something that I'm looking forward to going into further as I continue my studies. Music is an excellent tool for people with Alzheimer's and dementia or the elderly. I finished a practicum working with the elderly in an assisted living facility, and every week they look forward to me coming just because I was interacting with them and making sure that they were having a good time and being able to look back on their life experiences and share their stories through the musical experience that I was giving to them.
And do you have any personal experience with this kind of thing, aside from your professional experience?
Well, I was up in Omaha for my spring break, and my mom's friend's dad has beginning stage Alzheimer's, and so she asked me to come in and play some songs with him, and it was an incredible experience for me to see the emotions coming out of her father from the music that I was playing with him. And he's not a big singer, but I was actually able to get him to sing some songs with me and sing some songs with his wife, and it was really an incredible experience for me personally, and I'm sure it was also amazing for them to participate in.
Thanks so much, Alex.
Yeah.
I wonder if, Laura, you could respond to that.
Well, you know, what Alex was sharing made me think of another way in that music is helpful. Because music is stored throughout the brain and speech is stored in just one part of the brain and is impacted pretty early on in this disease, kind of an interesting thing that we see sometimes is that people who cannot speak any longer might be able to sing the words, might be able to hum along and communicate in that way. So it's yet another way that music taps into.
Have you seen that happen where someone can't speak something they want to say but finds a way to sing it? I wonder if you have a story you could tell us.
Not a particular story. It goes back to, you know, memory, long-term memory, and where we store things in the brain and being able to access that way. Kind of the same way if you're in a room full of people and you sing the first part of Jesus Loves Me, the room will respond back with "This I Know," because that's such an ingrained part of our memory and our association with music.
And something else that she mentioned is that that he didn't actually, the person she interacted with, didn't have a previous strong relationship with music, but that she was still able to generate a really emotional response by getting him to sing with her. Is the previous relationship with music a key point to this, or is it not necessary?
Well, I think it can definitely, if a person's been connected to music, it's definitely a powerful thing. But music is such a a basic evolutionary part of who we are. When you think about rhythm, that's a powerful way of using music. I believe in, with Parkinson's patients, that rhythm's been used to help some of the symptoms stay subsided a little bit. So music is definitely, it's just part of who we are as humans. So it can reach anybody that way.
Let's talk to Barbara in Parkville. Hi, Barbara.
Hi there. My mom had pretty bad, can you hear me?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Hello? Oh, okay. My mom had pretty bad Alzheimer's, and she died last September. And music had always been a really big part of her life. And when she was not really remembering much of anything, people were always amazed if there was music brought into her care home. She could still harmonize with somebody. She just knew the words to every song in the world, practically. And if I started singing the melody, she could harmonize with me, which was pretty amazing. And then, and when she was dying in hospice and she wasn't talking, she seemed semi-comatose or really pretty non-responsive. I was standing by her bed, and I was singing How Much Is That Doggy in the Window? And like you do with a little kid, I was leaving off the last word of each phrase, and she would fill it in. So the very last words that she ever said was for sale.
Oh.
The last line was, how much is that doggy? And she's lying there like she's not really there. And she says, for sale.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing us that with us, Barbara. That's a beautiful story.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me. It reminded me of one of the residents in with El Rey. She has a little background in music. In fact, I think she used to play the guitar or something with a group. But anyhow, whenever we get together for group singing, I always sit by her because she harmonizes with me. It's amazing. And yet she does not talk very her verbal ability is not good. But the other day they were playing some of her favorite music, and she was actually doing the air guitar. She's sitting there doing the air guitar. I just about died laughing. I thought it was wonderful. Wonderful.
Well, Jeannie, I'd love to hear another song that you told us was on your husband's playlist. We're going to listen.
There's 150 of them on there, girl.
I wish we had time to listen to them all. You and your husband have fantastic taste. The next one is going to be You Were Always on My Mind by Willie Nelson. Any particular memories you want to share before we hear that?
Well, he's always on my mind.
Okay, let's listen to You Were Always on My Mind by Willie Nelson.
Maybe I didn't love you quite as often as I could have. Maybe I didn't treat you quite as good as I should have. If I made you feel second best, girl, I'm sorry I was blind. You were always on my mind.
And I want to ask Michael Rosato Bennett about whether the people he met in creating the movie Alive Inside, if there were certain songs that came up again and again for them. This is one of the ones that Jeannie chose for her husband. And Michael, what are some of the songs that people tend to request frequently for playlists?
You know, Dan likes to say that music is like our fingerprint. You know, every person is different. And, you know, some people have, you know, love Jimmy Durante and Frank Sinatra, and others are the Beach Boys, or, you know, Willie Nelson actually is, I can't listen to that man and not well up with emotion.
That is happening in this room right now for more than one of us.
This is the blessing of this topic that, you know, I think all of your listeners and certainly everyone in the room and myself, you know, it takes us to this place where we are just beautifully human, where love is real and connection is real and life actually becomes very juicy. And I think that that's the ground that we should, the way we should care for our elders. And if we can inject or bring that into the experience for elders aging in the American nursing home, there's 16,000 of these nursing homes, 35,000 assisted living facilities, 10,000 hospices. And if we can bring, you know, just what we just experienced, that very human moment, into these places more, it will be a good thing.
There's something
and I'm very grateful that we're doing that.
Oliver Sacks in your movie said he made a reference to a Kant quotation that was music is the quickening art. What do you think that means? The quickening art.
Listen, you know, music is so central. It's probably we were profound in music probably as developing entities before a language. So it's a conversation that we've been in for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years, and it affects the other part of our being, not our thinking part, but our emotional self and our kinesthetic self, our deep the deep primal parts of what we are as human beings. And I think that is what is quickened. Music just instantly reaches down to that, and it reminds us of our sort of central aliveness.
You mentioned the animation or the kinesthetic approach of music. And one thing in watching the reactions of people visually in your movie is that there's something that happens in the eyes, in people's eyes when they hear music. Can you talk about what you saw in people's eyes? Because our listeners, we can't play that for our listeners.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that was the most amazing thing. Like, if you sit and you're alone and you've had no visitors, what fades is that spark in your eyes, and when you lose a bit of yourself, and then when somebody brings you your music and you hear it, it's reminding you of something that you've forgotten, but you should never have forgotten. Just that joy of life and who you were. And so the first place that bubbles up is people's eyes, and they literally crisp.
I wish we could keep talking about it, but we've got to go. That's all the time we have for this conversation. Thank you so much to all of our guests for this really emotional but fascinating topic. Michael Rosato Bennett, it's been great hearing about your film, Alive Inside. Thank you so much. That movie opens at the Tivoli Theater in Westport this Friday. We'll have a link to showtimes and other details at kcur.org later today. And Laura Swartzendruber, project coordinator for Music and Memory, Jeannie Buckendahl, devoted caregiver, thank you both so much for sharing your knowledge and stories.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. We've had help today from Suzanne Hogan. I'm Gina Kaufman, and that's it for today. Stick around for Up to Date next.